The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
A warm welcome to those that are new to the Buddhist Society of Victoria. And as always, this evening, I usually have a theme for the meditation, so I'll discuss that. And are there any people here for the first, haven't meditated before? Anyone not meditated before? Oh, that's good. Sometimes when I'm given these themes, I think, oh, I don't know if the beginners will be able to relate to that. So as some of you will know, yesterday I gave a talk on the recollection of ethical living. It's called Sila Nusati. And that means, you know, virtue, what we usually call in Buddhism, virtue or morality, ethical conduct, ethical behavior. But I think ethical living is a good way of describing it, making it relevant to people today. It's really, in a sense, a very powerful sense, a recollection of our own goodness. And so this is another way of looking at it. Instead of focusing, as we often do, on our faults and shortcomings. And the Buddha, he taught the six of these recollections. These are the main recollections. And they are something that he recommended. And the reason for teaching them, of course, is that they're key aspects of the Dhamma, of the practice of the Buddhist path. And, of course, most of you know these recollections, you've heard of at least three of them, and that's a recollection on the qualities of the Buddha, recollection on the Dhamma, and the recollection on the Sangha. I think most people know those three. But there's also recollection of generosity, of our giving, our sharing, And that's quite a powerful one. This is an important practice in the Buddhist path. And of course, the next one, the one we're doing this evening, is recollection of our ethical living. And the last one is an interesting one. It's a recollection of the devas, how beings are reborn in a heavenly or a divine a realm. And how that can be, how we can develop those qualities. And of course, the Buddha's teachings are more about how we can go beyond that and not be reborn anywhere. So that's the six recollections. And of course, many of you will know, I'm sure you'll know, the other four that the Buddha talked about, but not in the main sequence, which is mindfulness of breathing. I think most people heard of mindfulness of breathing, anapanasati, mindfulness of the body, famous, and also mindfulness of death, not so popular. And the last one is mindfulness or recollection of peace. So these are four additional ones. And the Buddha says that these recollections are a way that we can develop the whole path from the beginning to the end. You know, and develop the insights, develop the peace, the letting go, enlightenment and nirvana. But their purpose, the main purpose of these anusatis or recollections is to bring up inspiration and joy in our lives, in our practice. And I don't think there's anybody who thinks that they can't do with that. You know, more inspiration, more joy. And of course, that particularly inspiration, I didn't mention it yesterday, is really very powerfully connected with faith. Once we get inspiration in something, we will have faith and confidence in it. It will give us energy to actually apply it. We'll see the value in it. Because when we have inspiration, it gives this sense of value to whatever we're inspired by, whoever we're inspired by. And of course, this ties into those faculties that the Ajahn Brahm used to call the controlling faculties, that when we have faith or confidence, convictions in other words, it leads to energy, it leads to mindfulness, it leads to the mind coming together, samadhi, stillness, it leads to wisdom. So that's sort of a like a core. These are controlling, as I say, qualities in the mind, especially once people have reached the first stage of enlightenment. But even for us, the other controlling faculties we have, the defilements, they're often running the show for us. So, but we are doing, by following the path, we're reducing their power in our lives. So, and of course, as I mentioned, that this brings up joy and inspiration. These recollections generates energy. And it's important that with the recollection of generosity and the recollection of ethical living, that it connects our practice with our daily life, doesn't it? It's really seeing these the qualities we can develop in daily life from generosity, giving, sharing, developing inner qualities, connecting that. And the same with ethical ethical living. We are connecting our actions in the world with the spiritual path that we're on. We're connecting the outer world with the inner world. And sometimes that's not quite a good connection for us. We can, so that's a very good way to integrate it and blend it. So, and of course, I've taught this is the fifth recollection that I'm teaching this evening. I've taught Buddha Nisati, and the recollection of the Dhamma, the Sangha, generosity, and this will be virtue. And next time, recollection of the Devas. So for those who want to go to a heavenly rebirth, then we'll give you the info next time. It's also actually very good. It's interesting because the recollection for the becoming a heavenly being, a Deva, these are beings that are born in a very pure sort of realm, really, a much more refined realm than the human realm, more based on the mind, mind-made bodies. But the way that they are born there is they develop the qualities in this life, and then their minds fit into that sort of that state that qualifies them to live in a heavenly world. So this is what we need to do here and now, but that's next time. So this evening I'd like to do a guided meditation on this ethical living. And last month Ajahn Sadro talked about it when he gave a Sunday talk too. And so this is sort of further teaching about it. And of course, sometimes people, I don't know if any of you have any confusion about it, but what is ethical living? I think... because I checked on the internet, I had a look on the internet, ethical living, and it came up with quite a few different things that we wouldn't necessarily think of in a Buddhist context. And one of them is, of course, the environment, you know, relating ethically to the environment, not allowing our greed, hatred and delusion to really destroy the environment. So that was an interesting one. And living sustainably, you know, and also ethical investments was another area that I saw too. So, but the Buddha's teaching is really, when we're talking in terms of ethics, when we're talking in terms of goodness, it's about not harming. And it's important that we're not harming ourselves or others. So I think this is very comprehensive. And of course, it's through our actions, what we say, and also what we think and how we feel in the mind. And of course, the quality of those actions, as everybody knows about karma, is if it's a wholesome motivation, a wholesome intention, this will lead to good karma. If it's the reverse, it'll lead to bad karma for us, which we'll experience at a later date. So it's very important, you know, to reflect on our actions of body, speech and mind and develop the positive. So this is very, very good. And how do we do that? I think all of you pretty much know that we do this, first of all, through the precepts. And I talked about that at some length yesterday. And of course we have. This is a level of the precepts usually of restraining or refraining from doing things. We say that we undertake to refrain from killing living beings, to refrain from taking what's not given, to refrain from sexual misconduct, to refrain from lying, to refrain from taking alcohol and drugs. So these are the precepts. So it's a refraining, a restraining. And that's not always easy because our negative qualities in the mind can lead us to break the precepts. But the point of it is we do our best to avoid breaking. These are guidelines for us to use. And when we think of them as ways of freeing ourselves from negative emotions and the negative speech and actions that comes from them, then we can perhaps get gratitude or joy can come up, actually. But very good. This is the other level of this is the level of development. So developing the opposite quality, instead of killing or harming living beings, being caring about them, compassionate about them, concerned for their well-being. And so this is, if we develop those states of mind, it's not very easy to harm living beings. If you've got a lot of loving kindness, it'd be quite difficult to kill living beings, even things that we find annoying, you know, like cockroaches, ants, and this sort of thing. And the same with refraining from taking what's not given. We can develop giving. We can develop a sense of honesty, integrity, in our not taking things that are not given. This is stealing, really. And so this is an important one. And refraining from sexual misconduct, of course, that sense of loyalty, fidelity, reliability, important in our lives. And contentment too. Being content with one partner instead of being tempted by other partners. And of course, refraining from lying, developing truthfulness. So these are qualities that we can develop. And the last one of the five precepts, and I'll leave it at that, alcohol, refraining from taking alcohol and drugs, and having a commitment instead to mindfulness and clarity, being clear-headed, knowing what's going on in the present moment. So as we often see, alcohol and drugs complicates life greatly and leads to a lot of the problems that we experience in life, we hear about in life. So the theme this evening really arose from one of the questions I had yesterday. I thought it was a good question, and somehow it echoed today. I thought it just came to me. And this person said, when is the right time to do these recollections or anusatis, in meditation or before meditation? And I thought, oh, that's a good question, really. And I did answer it yesterday, but it sort of came back to me as, you know, something that's important to dwell on a little bit or explain a bit more. And the recollections, what they're doing is describing a natural sequence that arises in meditation. And you see it again and again in the Buddha's teaching. He describes this sequence, and it's in terms of the experiential feelings that arise, the emotions that arise. And it's a very, and he describes them as a natural process of cause and effect, starting from mindfulness of something. And this evening, for instance, we'll focus on ethical living or our goodness. And it's important, it's quite interesting that this is mindfulness. It's in the present moment, but we're recollecting something from the past. So this extends the understanding of mindfulness. Whatever we put our minds on in the present moment, even be it recollecting past events. So, and in this case, ethical living. But I often say, any positive quality, we can use any positive quality as a springboard for developing this sequence. We have the other five recollections, but any positive qualities can be used for it. And these recollections are actually like a template. I think that this is how I see them, a template for meditation. You can put in the initial cause for starting, igniting the whole sequence of meditation. So I call this, often call it priming the meditation. You know how we kickstart things and prime things. Used to be prime pumps and things like that, but I don't think they do that so much these days. But it's priming it so that it ignites that sequence. It brings up that initial emotion of inspiration and then joy, and then it leads on to these other emotions, such as rapture, and then on to tranquility, happiness, and then the mind coming together. So this is a sequence you see everywhere in the Buddhist teaching. And some people may say, well, my meditation's not like that. And I think most of us would like meditation to be like that. But we can get a taste of this and go in that direction little by little. And of course, when we are kindling these wholesome or positive emotions, what we're doing is reducing the negative ones. We're weakening them, you know, what we call the five hindrances. We're weakening those obstacles to meditation and wisdom. And of course, as I say, it gives, that inspiration is giving the spark of energy to our practice as well. Which then becomes joy and the rest of the sequence. But of course, one can use, the person asked is, do you do this before the meditation or in meditation? And you can use these emotions as the object of meditation, which will gradually change during the meditation. That is possible. But usually I don't do it that way. I don't usually do it that way. I combine the emotion that's aroused. Many of you who are used to my approach know this very well, that having brought up a positive emotion, then to give it to the object of meditation, usually the one I use is the breath. So that makes the breath very attractive when it's with a positive emotion, and it's very easy to stay with. And the result of staying with it is that samadhi, this quality of the mind coming together little by little, is happening. So then this joy can really develop, then the rapture can really develop. For many people, just having the emotion on its own is probably asking a lot. But using the breath is quite an easy, much easier way of doing it. And it makes the breath very interesting. Otherwise, people say, well, it's a bit dull, isn't it, really? Nothing happened. It's a bit ordinary. So, and if you look at the, just to, oh, gee, time's going by, isn't it? Very quick. If you look at the Anapanasati Sutta, this is how it develops, really. You have the first four stages of Anapanasati where the mindfulness is really developed, and then the joy and the happiness comes up. Then the mind comes together and goes into the deep meditations, comes out of the deep meditations, and then can contemplate what they've experienced in the meditation and develop this deep experiential wisdom, deep seeing for themselves. So this is in line with these anusatis, you know. So it's in meditation we use the anusatis. And at the beginning, priming the meditation with a positive emotion. So I think that covers pretty much how we, the approach to it. We could go. So the important thing, I think, with the meditation is really delighting, this recollection, delighting in the goodness of our action, speech, and mind state. That's important. Not getting hung up. We can often, when we think of precepts, we can often agonize over the lapses in the precepts. And this is not the point of this meditation at all. It's really to bring up this joy that will encourage us. If we feel joyful about the good things we've done, said, or even thought, it will encourage us to develop more of it. If we look at the lapses, it goes the other way. We won't get much joy coming up at all. So it's important to look at the positives. And to remember, I think one of the nice similes from the Buddha uses for when these negative qualities decrease is the image of the moon freed from the clouds of defilements. And these verses, they're in the Dhammapada actually, are related to Angulimala, and he was a serial killer. So, I mean, that's big time defilement, isn't it? Killing living beings, and many living beings at that, human beings. So, you know, this is, it's possible for us too. These are qualities of the mind that we can develop. We don't need to limit ourselves by thinking of defining ourselves in particular ways. These qualities, good qualities, are there for anyone to develop, to incline towards, to encourage. And it's a bit like, came to me this evening, the image of children. You know, when people have children, if you look after them, if you give them love, they will go in a certain direction. If you just ignore them or are very negative to them, don't give them a lot of love and care, they'll go in another direction because of that. And our minds, pretty similar to these children. We can incline, we can look after them, take them in a good direction, or they can go in a negative direction. Most people have never heard of this, so it wouldn't occur to them that we're looking after the mind. And so this is important. And also to remember that the precepts too are training rules. So it doesn't expect us to be perfect. The Buddha didn't expect us to be perfect. So that's important to keep in mind. And as I said, we need to focus on the things that were successes in terms of the precepts, and also those positive things, that those positive qualities that are the opposite of harming and all the other aspects of the precepts. And one of the things that is very important too is just to focus on the benefit for ourselves. But also, we are benefiting others by keeping precepts, by observing ethical behaviour. It's such an important part of our lives, really. And if you reflect, as we will a little bit, it's really important to have like ethical guidelines. And Buddhism is amazing. It's very clear. Most of the other religions are a little bit unclear. We have the Ten Commandments, but some of them are about relationship to God and other ideas. So this is something we can develop. So I think now is the time for a guided meditation. I can feel a guided meditation coming on. There's some water. I hope you can too. One of the things to keep in mind with important things for developing our ethical living is to keep in mind that it's commitment to keep it continuously as possible, best as we can, make it a part of our lives, and our sincerity in practicing it and our honesty, self-honesty is important. But most important thing, kindfulness. We're also kind. We're not heavy-handed with it because that will turn us off. There we are. So now we can start the meditation, guided meditation on ethical living or our goodness. So now we can find close our eyes and just come into the present moment, can leave all the talking behind, all the concerns before he came here, and all the concerns about what will happen after this, what we plan. So we can just feel free that we have nothing we have to do, nowhere we have to go at the moment. And we can give attention to the body just to see if it's comfortable, it's balanced. We can make any adjustments we need. Maybe see if the head's balanced over the shoulders, shoulders over the hips. And everything feels comfortable and balanced. And we can bring our attention to relaxing the body, giving the body this soothing mental massage. Starting at the top of the head, or the back of the head, front of the head, the relaxing and soothing those parts of the head. This sense of kindness, warmth, relaxation. And now bringing our attention to the face and around the eyes, around the mouth, and soothing these areas, giving this warmth of warm attention, this kindness, relaxation, like a mental massage. And moving the attention to the neck, all around the neck, soothing the neck. Giving this healing, warm attention. Now bringing to mind the right shoulder, starting at the neck and moving slowly along the right shoulder, giving it a good mental massage, allowing any tension, any stiffness to relax, to dissolve. Now bringing to mind the right arm, starting at the top of the right arm and moving down the right arm to the tips of the fingers, relaxing and soothing the right arm and the right hand and fingers. Now bringing to mind the left shoulder and moving our attention along the left shoulders, slowly soothing, relaxing, unburdening the left shoulder so it feels comfortable and relaxed. and bringing to mind the left arm starting at the top of the shoulder and moving our attention down the left arm to the tips of the fingers, soothing, relaxing with this kindness, care and healing the left arm. And now we can bring to mind the back, starting just below the shoulders and moving our attention down the back, giving the back this mental massage, relaxing and soothing any tense areas, any painful areas, with this kindness and warmth. Now bringing to mind the front of the body, starting just below the shoulders and moving our attention down the front of the body, relaxing it, soothing it, calming any painful areas, any tense areas, soothing and relaxing them with this mental massage. And now bringing to mind the left leg and starting at the top of the left leg, moving the attention down the left leg, all around it, down to the tips of the toes, soothing and relaxing the left leg, this warmth, this warm mental massage. Now bringing to mind the right leg, starting at the top of the right leg and moving our attention down the right leg, all around it, right down to the tips of the toes, soothing, relaxing, healing this kind mental massage. And now we can become aware of the whole body just sitting comfortably, hopefully, relaxed, soothed, with this warm, kind attention. And we can bring to mind the question, is ethical living important to me? Why is it important? And we can bring to mind times when we had successes with saying no to negative states of mind that were encouraging us to harm beings or harm ourselves. When we said no to them and felt this sense of joy, freedom, getting free from these negative states of mind that can drive our speech and our actions. Now we can recollect, remember times when we did things, good things, that brought up these positive qualities that are the opposite of breaking the precepts, of caring, of compassion, of honesty, of fidelity, loyalty, truthfulness, and clear-headedness. Remembering those occasions. And now we can just recollect the benefits of ethical living, of being a good person for ourselves, perhaps a sense of self-esteem, integrity, and for others that they can trust, they can rely on us being a good person, keeping our word. And we can become aware of any feelings that have been generated, that have arisen from contemplating, recollecting like this, whatever the feeling is, positive feeling is. And we can give this feeling to the breath coming in and give it to the world as it goes out. Maybe it's a feeling of inspiration, joy, faith, satisfaction, whatever feeling, positive feeling arises, we can give that to the breath. Breathing in this quality and breathing it out. Giving our attention to the breath. And if the mind wanders off, we can remember that initial feeling and give it to the breath again. And now, as we're coming towards the end of the meditation, we can share whatever feelings arose in the meditation, whatever feelings of inspiration, of warmth, of joy, contentment, peace, satisfaction, whatever it was, with everyone here in this hall. And we can expand this sharing of these positive feelings to all the beings around this hall, humans, the animals, the insects, all beings, and wishing them well, giving this, sharing this warm, for this positive emotion, and expanding that feeling further and further, until we cover the whole of the world and all realms of existence for all beings. This feeling of goodness, the power of goodness. And now we can come back to ourselves and just reflect about on the meditation, on how we feel now. Did we experience, what feelings did we experience during the meditation? Did combining this feeling with the breath help develop the meditation, develop more ability to stay with the breath? And to reflect on what were the causes for whatever positive feelings arose for me, or caused them to come up. And we can have the aspiration or intention to develop more of this recollection of our goodness, of ethical living, to bring up more of this inspiration and joy, and to encourage us to see the goodness in each and every one of us. to make it grow by giving it this warm attention, looking at our successes, our positive qualities that we are developing for our own benefit and for the benefit of others. And now I'll ring the bell 3 times, and on the 3rd time, if you'd like to come out of meditation, you're welcome to. So now is the time for Q&A, but just to mention that it's good to reflect on our own goodness and our good qualities like this, because it's a bit of an antidote to a lot of the feeling that you get in the world that human beings are not good. And a lot of that message you get in the news as well. You look at the news and there's quite a bit of negative stuff there. They're now having good news as well. But so this is a good antidote for that, and a good antidote for the tendency of us to look at our negative qualities and give a lot of attention to them and ignore our good qualities. So this is something that can bring balance to our lives, and by doing that, encourage more of it. And of course, that balance brings stability to the mind, and we can develop the meditation more deeply, go more deep. See you. Yeah, there we are. So are there any comments and questions? How did people find it? Comments, questions, or complaints?
John, there are some questions online. Might start with that, but at first I'd just like to read a comment.
Yeah. Good.
That someone wrote, "Thank you for a great talk and meditation. Mm. When you asked us, what do you get from living ethically? My mind went to not feeling anxious, and then it helped me to feel safe, which enabled me to be in my body without the aid of mind or mood altering drugs. This strengthens my recovery from drug addiction."
Oh, that's great. That's good. Because it does give that stability of mind and that sense of safety too, for us and for others too. So I'm glad to hear that. That's good. Because this week I'm having a session at a drug rehabilitation centre in Wood End. So it's good to hear that. And anything that gives us strength in terms of dealing with addiction is really a positive for us, because very easy, this experience of the 5 senses always takes us towards some sort of addiction or rather, you know, whether we consider them very minor and harmless or ones that really do cause a lot of grief for ourselves and others. It's really the nature of these 5 senses. Because we find something pleasant, we want more of it. And it just keeps going. This is the nature. See you, Paul, and congratulations on becoming a grandfather. Is it a boy or a girl?
Girl.
Oh, right. I think you told me before. There we are. So very good. So thank you for that, Langdon. And if there are any other questions or comments from the floor...
There is another question.
There's one in the hall. Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's very good. We give you the microphone so you can be heard online to people don't hear this.
Hi, thank you so much for the meditation. I found it incredibly powerful and positive.
Good.
Particularly liked reflecting on the clouds parting, the negative thoughts parting and seeing the moon. I think in our society there is often a lot of negativity, as you said, but also if you're someone who does good, there's a lot of cynicism about, you get greeted with cynicism or a sense of people not really believing in your intentions.
Yeah.
And I think the meditation can help with that, but is there anything else that you can recommend that helps with that cynicism that seems to be in society?
And I think it's very good if we, because when we do the recollection, it's really basically for ourselves and to bring up that inspiration and joy. But it also, it does give us more strength too. We realize these are positives. And I think when we see other people, because we live in a fairly cynical world, people's always thinking that they have other motives, you know, for doing and saying what they do. They may seem good. And that is a natural suspicion that that comes in a world that's not run on ethical principles. And it's not a common thing to see someone who's very ethical and very got a sense of integrity. But when we do, we feel a certain sort of strength and groundedness that comes with that and safety that comes with that. And the Buddha actually mentions that, that it gives when we are living ethically, it gives freedom from worry, anxiety, that people will harm us, we can't trust them, etc. But most of society is really not like that. And the way we can, you know, sort of impact on that cynicism, that doubt, is by just being ourselves. And when people see the way we act and speak, after a while they realize, yeah, it's for real. You know, sometimes people, they think we're pretending, you know, that's, you know, pretending to be goodies or pretending to be kind. And it has this idea that we are a particular way, but really it's missing the point that these are qualities in the mind that we can either develop, you know, cultivate, encourage, or not, you know. And of course, these are not, they're not set in concrete. So the things that we can develop, and by being an example, I think that that is a great statement to the world. It really is a peaceful person, a kind person, a good person, great statement to the world. And it has benefit for us, this inner sense of integrity and worth, self-worth, and it will impact on others when they see that consistency, if they see we are like that. Most of the time, we won't be like that all the time. And of course, one of the things is not to attach to our goodness or kindness, because then when we're not good or kind, we can be very negative towards ourselves, because these qualities are there, and we will never be perfect. So, no, that's great. I think we need more examples. Yeah, because that's the thing, a good person, a kind person's like a role, can be like a role model for us to develop those qualities too. So it's very, that's good. I think it's great. Yeah. And I often think too, when people, when you sense that from other people, it's, we should reflect more on, this is where they're coming from. it's not where I'm coming from, but it's where they're coming from. Because whatever we say about another person, about the world or whatever, is usually a reflection of our mind states. And so, you know, we get an idea of where they're coming from, you know. And they're living in a world of suspicion. They're living in a world where there's not much respect. They think people are not worthy of respect, perhaps, and, you know, And also sometimes, or, you know, they have this idea of goody two-shoes. And but I think this is a wonderful thing to have in the world, to develop within ourselves. We don't have to advertise it. We don't have to put it on the Facebook or on the social media or whatever. Just for ourselves. And that gives us quiet confidence. Yeah, this is good. This is going in a good direction. It's giving me this sort of peace, stability, feeling of worth. And it may, if it rubs off on other people, great. Why not? So thank you for that comment. That's great. Yes. I think that's it. Yeah.
We have a question about meditation online. I've recently heard from another Ajahn who says that the accepted understanding of right effort in meditation is not correct. Right. So I'm confused now. Would you please talk about right effort in meditation?
Yes. No, that's a very, very important subject. The whole of the Buddhist path can be put into, actually a lot of these factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. Right effort is, of course, the effort to avoid negative states of mind. It's the effort to let go of them when they do arise and to develop positive states of mind and to maintain them. And this, of course, is crucial to the meditation. When we start with right effort, it's the beginning of the what they call the samadhi section of the Noble Eightfold Path. Right effort gives rise to right mindfulness, gives rise to samadhi. And what we're seeing is, you know, with right effort, if we develop wholesome qualities, positive qualities, and maintain them, we can actually avoid negative qualities, and therefore we don't have to let go of them. So developing these positive emotions is actually enabling us to let go of the negative ones, the hindrances. And when the hindrances are down, then mindfulness has the opportunity to grow and to develop and become more continuous. When it becomes continuous, then it becomes, the mind is coming together in what we call samadhi, one-pointedness, stillness. It's getting, its focus is getting more and more narrow. It's coming to oneness, and then the mind is coming to oneness. And then the experience of that state is a state of oneness, you know, not the usual state where we're observing, we're seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, just being this state of joy and happiness in the meditation, piti sukha. So this right effort is really important, and it's, I often like to think of it in conjunction with right intention. This is the intention which we practice the whole of the Noble Eightfold Path with, the right intention we practice meditation with. And of course, that's the important thing, is first of all renunciation, that we're looking for our happiness not out in the world, we're looking inside. And this is the place where happiness will be found. This is where we can really improve the world we live in, is actually developing the mind, going inside. But also that we have the intention of kindness, caring. This is abhyapada, so it's these non-ill will, is a technical term for it. And also this sort of this caring and kindness, this harmlessness towards ourselves and towards others. So we're going to have sort of compassion for ourselves. We're helping. These attitudes really are important in meditation, because you can see sometimes meditators can really be hard on themselves, force themselves to sit for long periods, even though the mind's not in necessarily a good state, or the body even. And so this attitude, this intention, this motivation we practice meditation with is vital. And it's part of right effort. To me, they link very, very, very much, that what we're going towards is developing wholesome states of mind, letting go of negative, And therefore allowing the mind to go deeper and deeper into mindfulness and then into this one-pointedness. And it's safe because all those negative qualities are down. And it's the only way we will go into deep meditation is once those negative qualities are reduced. If they go completely for a time, then we'll be into the really deep meditations, the jhanas. So I think that's a pretty standard interpretation of a right effort. So I hope that was okay for you. I have been giving... see you then. Good night. I give every 2 weeks, the nuns at the monastery, the bhikkhunis, they need to ask for a talk from a monk who has more than 20 years as a monk. So I get to talk to them every fortnight. And we are doing the four right efforts. And we've been doing it for over a year. And we're only up to the third right effort, developing wholesome states. And I think we can go forever. So these four right efforts are really important. I was always very impressed with them when Ayakema was teaching them too. You know, she really expressed it very, very well. But they're so important for our lives. You know, this avoiding is what we're doing with ethical living, actually. First part of it is actually restraining. That's avoiding these negative states of mind. If we can do that, that's good. And then letting go of them, that's a much harder work, as we all find. And then developing the positive, that's actually the shortcut to avoiding and letting go. So this is the hard bit too, is to maintain them keep them going without grasping them as me and mine. So I hope that sort of answered the question on right effort. I don't know what interpretation you had, that this person had, but nevertheless, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. This. All right. Is there someone at the back? And Sue, there's two questions here. So if you've got the microphone. All right. Oh, wasn't you, Sue? There we are. Someone at the back. There we are. Would you like to? No, at the back of the. No, that's fine because I can hear you then online. Yeah.
Thank you. I was just thinking, I'd like to know, please, you talk about kindness and compassion for others. Mm. How do you maintain this attitude when people are being not so nice to you, when they're being mean and, I just find that to be a real challenge to maintain kindness and compassion when you're being treated not very well.
Yeah, that is a very, very tough for us to do. And really, you know, the important thing in those situations is to have kindness and caring for ourselves. We're the ones being hurt, actually, by these, what the words they're saying or the actions they're doing. And so we need to look after ourselves, to be kind and really caring for ourselves. Sometimes you hear people have the idea that you should give this kindness and caring to the person who's maybe abusing you. And good luck if you can do that. I think that's great. But the first thing is to have that kindness and caring for yourself. And then when it's in your mind, in your heart, that if it's really there for you, if you're really there for yourself, I think others can feel that in a way. But it also makes us able to bear with some of these situations, or, you know, just to do what's necessary. If we feel that we need to walk away from it, okay, you know. And we can walk away without a lot of negative feeling in ourselves. To give that feeling of loving kindness or caring, compassion to the other person is often quite difficult. I think, first of all, we have to look after ourselves. You know, I call it emotional safety first, you know, first aid, that's what I usually call it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so that's good. So look after yourself and then things can change. So that's
good. Thank you.
So any other questions just before we finish off at 9 o'clock? It's almost 9 o'clock. So anything online or?
There's just one more question, Ajahn, which is a short answer.
Yeah.
I'm hoping.
Yeah.
If you become a deva,
yeah,
can you be challenged by fetters? Do they have the same hindrances?
Interestingly enough, they say so. Yes, they do. But they're obviously, because to be reborn in a heavenly realm, that we have to have the mind states that fit into that realm, so they are pretty good. But I remember one story that made me really contemplate what these heavenly beings' lives would be like, and that was when Ajahn Plien, who's a famous Thai monk who had psychic abilities, and you hear there are many stories of things he could do with his mind. He's a very, very nice monk, actually, not a scary monk. He's passed away now. But he said on one occasion he went to, he was thinking of his mother, and he found that she'd been reborn in a heavenly realm. So he visited her, and he was talking to her or communicating with her, and he said he was really surprised because she was unhappy. And he asked her, "Why are you unhappy?" And she said, "The other devas have bigger mansions than I do. They have bigger palaces than I do. I want to be reborn as a human so I can get a bigger mansion." When I heard that, I thought, wow, that's not that different from human beings, really. But obviously, to be reborn as a deva, their ethical behaviour has to have been good, and obviously the mind states somewhat, they still have these negative qualities in them, unless they're born as a Brahma being, because a Brahma being, in order to be born in that realm, this is the jhana realms actually, then they have to have a purity of mind, have to let go of wanting things and desire. Otherwise, they can't enter that, the jhanas, they can't enter that realm. Their mind won't fit there. So the devas, they sound a bit like human beings, actually, but but much more refined. In order for them to be born in that existence, the mind is much, much more refined. And of course, you see, people in this life who are like devas. And you can think, I know where they're headed once they pass, the body passes away. So thank you very much for this evening, and I hope you found that recollection of ethical living, of goodness, of help in your lives and in your meditation. So, and for those who would like to, we can pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha to finish off.